So thank you very much to the organizers for the opportunity to speak here, and thank you all for coming. So my title of the talk is Statistical Properties of Quantum Gravity. Quantum gravity is a model that we proposed some months ago with Fratini Markopoulou and Lee Smolin. So I want to spend roughly the first half of the talk reviewing that model and telling you how it works. And then in the second part of the talk, I want to use some tools, well, I want to use statistical mechanics to learn something about this model that we didn't know a couple of months ago. So first of all, what is quantum gravity? Well, the main idea that we're trying to implement in this model is the following. If we start with a complete graph, a sample of a complete graph with a small number of nodes is shown here. There are several nodes, and there are edges linking the nodes, and there are edges linking all possible nodes in the graph. This is a small graph, but we're imagining that we're dealing with a graph in which the number of nodes is very large, say something like that. And the observation is that if you start erasing edges from a complete graph like this, you might arrive, after much erasing, to configurations that might look regular like this or regular like that. And this one, you might recognize, this is a honeycomb lattice, and it is a discretization of a two-dimensional space. And this is a fraction or a portion of a diamond lattice, which actually can be seen as a discretization of a three-dimensional flat space. And so, of course, if you erase edges differently, you might get all sorts of other graphs. But it is a nice feature, at least to us, that the single framework of starting with a complete graph and erasing edges, in this single framework, we can arrive at end graphs, which can have different dimensions, different topologies, and also different geometries. So these two are that I'm showing here are just examples of things that might come up. The model is a priori background independent in the sense that in the complete graph here, every node is equivalent to any other one. There is no notion of metric a priori. There is so every node is essentially a nearest neighbor to all the other ones. So this is what we would like to do. How are we going to do that? Well, what we do is we write a Hilbert space for the total system as the product of many copies of a smaller Hilbert space, H edge, that is associated with each edge in this complete graph. This small Hilbert space, H edge, is spanned by several states. What is important is one of them is called the off state, and the other ones are called on states. And what we want to do is write a Hamiltonian whose purpose is going to be to drive most of the states of most of these edges into this off state and leave the edges which are in the on state in configurations that resemble regular lattices, for example, the ones shown over here. The motivation for doing something like this is to test the general idea of geometric genesis or the emergence of a geometry from a model in which geometry is not an input and that is not a priori a model about geometry. So here, the idea essentially is that this model is going to have many phases or at least two phases. In one phase, the graph might look something like might be the complete graph exactly or something very highly connected as shown over here. And then in another phase, it might resemble a lattice as shown over here. Sorry? Yeah, good point. So a lot of the stuff that I will be talking about is you can think about it as being a classical model. There are some features that I'll mention on the next slide that are generally quantum. And so you'll see that a little bit when I'll introduce this Hamiltonian. If we just want to, I think you can make a classical model that will do something similar and you don't need quantum, but Part of the motivation for writing some terms in the Hamiltonian come from quantum features. So another motivation is to explore conditions under which the observed low energy limit that we see in the universe today might appear. So here the motivation is not too dissimilar from what you heard about from causal dynamical triangulations work on spin forms, group field theory, and others. Also, as a bonus, this transition from non-geometry to geometry might be useful, or it suggests a scenario for what could have happened in the early universe cosmology. So in that sense, we do want to understand what happened in early universe cosmology, so that in this sense the motivation is not dissimilar from what we heard about in loop quantum cosmology. Of course, the model is very different from anything else, so the motivation is not exactly the same. So we want to write the Hamiltonian, and we want to essentially we guess it, but we guess in such a way that we have a chance such that the minimal energy configuration could be a regular lattice, as I've shown on the previous slide. So here are several of the terms in the Hamiltonian. I won't go through much of the details, but I want to tell you, give you an idea of what the terms do. So the first term sets a preferred valence for the nodes in the graph. So there's a positive coupling V, and this term is minimized, essentially is equal to zero, when each node in the graph has a valence equal to V0, which is a parameter in the model that we put in by hand. If a node has a bigger valence or a smaller valence, then that costs some energy proportional to this coupling V. The next terms look a little bit complicated, but they're motivated or they're borrowed from work by condensed matter physicists Levin and Wen, who have shown that when these terms act on a regular lattice, they give rise to an emergent U1 gauge theory plus scalars. So here, I think this part is raised to your question about whether you need quantum. If you want this emergent U1 gauge theory to happen, this needs to be a quantum model. What is important here is that there is a loop term. The overall sign here is negative, and the coupling constant here is chosen such that there is a maximum in this coupling that happens at a loop length L star. So the minimal energy configuration for the model, according to this term, is a configuration in which there is a large number of loops, essentially those are closed paths in the graph, and these loops should have a length L star. And so by choosing various values for this coupling, this parameter B that is also chosen by hand, you can choose this L star to be the number that you like. So for example, 4 or 6 or something else. And the final term in the Hamiltonian is one that we don't really work with directly too much, but it's one that allows the graph to change from one configuration to the next one. So for example, in this picture, this edge here gets erased. So this move or this term is important in making this erasing strategy work. Okay, so this is the model that we proposed. It is a little bit complicated, in particular because of these quantum features over here. What I want to do in this talk is concentrate, essentially do a classical model that is very similar to this. And I'm going to concentrate on this term here that sets the valence of the nodes, and this loop term over here that tells you that the minimal energy configuration is a configuration in which there is a large number of loops. And I want to show you how to use some statistical mechanics to learn something about that model. So I'm going to introduce a canonical ensemble. So essentially I'm going to couple this graph to a heat bath at temperature T, or inverse temperature beta. And I'm going to try to compute the partition function Z. This is a sum over a configuration of the graph, and there is a Boltzmann factor here. I'm going to approximate that as another partition function Z1 raised to the power of n. The interpretation of Z1 is that it is the partition function that is associated with only one node in that graph. So in Z1, I want to sum over configurations that characterize only one node. So these configurations are going to be characterized by the valence of the node, V, ranging from 0 to n, and also by the number and the length of loops that touch on that particular node. So the number and length of these loops is going to be described by a set of numbers, n of L. So we write the partition function as shown over here. There is a sum over the valences. There is a sum over the types of loops. There is a counting function, which essentially what's important about this counting function is that increases with V. And there are some Boltzmann factors. This Boltzmann factor depends on the valence, and this one depends on the types of loops. A difficulty in evaluating this partition function is that there are some constraints on this summation over the types of loops. You can understand these constraints by looking at what I call arcs. So in this picture here, you have a node and a certain number of edges coming out. These edges define a certain number of arcs shown with these curly lines over here. So that the valence of the loops determine the number of arcs in the system. At the same time, if you look at a loop, you notice that that loop is composed of a sequence of arcs stuck one next to the other. And so the total number of arcs in the system is related to the number of loops. So that's written here, arcs is equal to that. And so these have to match. And so we need to make sure that these two things match while we are summing the configurations in this partition function. How are we going to get around these constraints? Well, we can do that by using two tricks. One is introducing a grand canonical ensemble. That means that we're going to think of the number of arcs as being an independent variable, and we're going to let that independent. And we're going to let that range from 0 to infinity independently of V. But we're going to remember that the number of arcs is restricted by these relations by using a chemical potential alpha. Sorry, the font is a little small. Maybe I'll change that. Also, we need to remember that the V's and the N's are related. And so I'm going to do that by multiplying the partition function by a function shown here, which is peaked around the configurations for which this constraint is satisfied. And so this function introduces a parameter, another parameter, or coupling, or chemical potential as you want, Xc. So if you insert these two things into the partition function, you get the grand canonical partition function, curly Z1, shown here. So here you have the sum over the arcs, and everything else is roughly the same. It's just written down in a slightly different way over here. From here, you can manipulate this partition function and write it as a product of two things, Z1V and Z1B. And these factors are written down here. Z1V depends just on the valence of the nodes. So the parameters n don't appear anywhere here. And so by choosing a particular n that you like, a particular temperature or beta that you like, and a particular particular couplings B, alpha, Xc that you like, you can evaluate this numerically and learn things, the usual things that you can learn from a partition function from here. The other factor, Z1B, you can write in the following form, and which is very similar to the partition function for a Bose gas. So this tells you that, for example, there will be a condensation phenomenon in the number of loops that you will see in the graph when the temperature is very small. Okay, so here I didn't write anything, but I want to tell you roughly what the predictions are, or what you would expect for the typical graph at various temperatures. When the temperature is very high, when the temperature is very high, then the configurations with where the number of when the valence is high are dominant, and so you'd expect the graphs to be very highly connected, very close to being the complete graph. Whereas when the temperature is small, you expect the configuration in which this Boltzmann factor here is maximized to be you expect the configurations for which V is equal to V naught to dominate, and you expect the graph to have a fixed valence. And for the loops, you expect that at low temperatures, all the loops will be the same size, and there will be a lot of them. And so if you want to choose the loops, the preferred loop size to be, for example, 6, and the preferred valence to be 3 or 4, there's a chance that you might get these lattices that I showed you on the first slide as the ground states in the low temperature limit. Another thing that you can study is at what temperature you expect the graph to change from being uniformly valent at V0, so when you expect that the valence to change from V0 to something higher, and that answer is that the temperature has to be such that beta times V is roughly equal to the logarithm of the number of nodes in the graph. So at this point, you can do some just a quick check to see whether this is consistent with some observations. So at the end of inflation, we know from observations that the universe was already 3+1 dimensional. So let's check whether that is consistent with this. So if you choose beta to be 10 to the 13 in Planck units, the temperature at the end of inflation, and if you choose the coupling V to be of order 1 in Planck units, and if you choose N to be roughly 10 to the 180, this is the number of nodes that you need to fill the currently observed universe, if you fill the universe with these points at Planck density. If you plug in these numbers, you find that from this condition that you expect the ground state to be safely in the V equals to V0 regime. And so you expect the graph to be very close to one of these lattice-like states that I showed you on the first slide. There's other things that you can try to do with these partition functions, and I'm just on the summary slide. And we are working on those, but now I just want to summarize. So quantum graphy is a discrete model which we are trying to use to study the idea of geometric genesis. The graph is coupled to a heat bath. We need that in the calculations of the partition function. We wrote down a Hamiltonian, and we showed some things about what we expect about this graph in the low temperature regime. We would like the graph to form a low-dimensional geometry. In this talk, I showed you a simpler version of the full model. I just considered the two terms in the Hamiltonian, and we used the statistical mechanics techniques to learn something about that. Some work is in progress on verifying that the predictions that we get from the partition function are consistent with the emergence of these lattices. So in other words, we know that the valence is equal to a particular number at low temperature. We know that the loops are all the same size at low temperature. Does that necessarily imply that the graph is in one of these lattice states that I showed in the first slide? That is something that we are working on right now, that requires some knowledge of graph theory that we're using. And we're also hoping to work some more on the kind of transition that happens between the ordered state at low temperature or high beta and the disordered phase at high temperature or low beta. So So that's what we're working on in the next, well, I'll be working on in the next couple of months. That's all I have to present today, so. Yeah, so that is a very common question that I get. The question is, what is this temperature that we're using? What determines what the temperature is, right? Yeah. Yeah, so that is a very common question that that we get. At the moment, I view it as a parameter that we need to work with the canonical ensemble. I didn't say this explicitly, but we're imagining that this evolution from early universe to universe today happens because the temperature drops. And so this parameter beta has to be such that happens. It's not something that is intrinsic in the model. That is something that we need to put in by hand, something extra. Yeah.
Thank you. Can I comment and work with
something?
I have two comments. One is a quick one. My question was earlier about the quantum group. There isn't anything quantum here. In fact, when you said the second slide, you know, jump out spoke. If they are actually called logical order, that really is beautiful. They are something good in it. And I don't think you are actually using that. So that leads to the second part. And I think that we push on that way, which is really the central point of your contemplative thinking here. It seems that, you know, you're looking at the statistical sums of the configurations, and you're sort of replacing the rules by the boson by the loop and so on. So that's why everything goes through, pretty much like a melting transition, or the disorder type of transition. Right? Mm-hmm. So maybe you started out thinking that way and then going to the graph and show this correspondence, it would be much more interesting if you could tell us, for example, when you started saying that you're clipping the edges, the limited edges, that presumably would correspond to some kind of defects showing up in the system. And in this kind of transition, how does that sort of, this net better statistical mechanics picture enable you to sort of come up with a picture of graphs, or you don't even want to talk about space time, right? But at some point, you're going to let us think that it has something to do with our space time. In fact, you mentioned that, you know, so we did make that connection. So, yeah. So I'm a little bit not happy with that, because the really core idea, you're not pushing it, but you're jumping over the step back and giving us the general sort of picture. There's nothing wrong with it, but mm-hmm. It would be nice if you could push what you start out saying that.
Okay, so let me respond to the first question because I know how to respond to that one. And the second one is more vague about. So when I wrote down the Hamiltonian, I said at the beginning that we're just guessing. So we're guessing what the Hamiltonian is. So this one is brand new. And so this one we have to come up with ourselves. But then, if you just note, just fixing the valence of a graph doesn't make a, if you just fix the valence of a graph, there is no hope that the graphs that you will get at low temperatures would be regular lattices. So we need some extra input. So we're thinking of maybe putting some input from the loops. So what is the motivation for putting a term that depends on the loops? Well, we notice that these loops appear in a Hamiltonian that describes a gauge theory. So we're adding these terms essentially because we want this one. And in order to have the emergent gauge theory, we need the quantum features of this model. After this, we want to do some statistical mechanics. We want to simplify. So then, we change this this term a little bit and turn it into a more classical system. But the motivation for it was really this quantum term. So that, yeah.
What is sort of that people, it's about to say comments are very, very, very welcome, and comments that I'm suppressing are very, very welcome.